Penguin Random House Audio presents On Savage Shores, How Indigenous Americans Discovered Europe. Written and read by Caroline Dodds Pennock. It is called Teoat, sea. Not that it is a god, it only means wonderful, a great marvel. And its name is Ilhuicaat. It is great, it terrifies. It is that which is irresistible, a marvel. Foaming, glistening with waves, bitter, most bitter, very salty. It contains man-eating animals, life. It is that which surges, it stirs, it stretches ill-smelling, restless. I live on the sea. I become a part of the sea. I cross over the sea. I die in the sea. I live on the sea. Written by Bernardino de Sahagún and his indigenous Nahua collaborators in the Florentine Codex. Completed circa 1578. Why words matter. Names matter. What we call ourselves, how people refer to us, says something about who we are, who we were, and how others see our relationship to them. For Indigenous peoples who have been historically oppressed, marginalised and insulted, names matter even more. This is not just a question of respect, but also an intentional push against colonial attempts to erase Indigenous identities and to obliterate their languages and beliefs through deliberate cultural genocide. Christian missionaries forcibly converted millions of people across the Americas from 1492 onwards. Indigenous beliefs and practices were prohibited, and native communities uprooted and deliberately acculturated. From the late 19th century right up until the 1990s in some places, Indigenous children from across Canada and the United States were torn away from their families and put into residential schools, which aimed to kill the Indian and save the man. There, the children's hair was cut, their languages were banned, and these boys and girls were subjected to appalling abuses in the service of what was called civilization. Thousands more were stolen and placed in the foster system, raised by white families, and they are slowly making their way home to identity and place. As you can imagine, for survivors and descendants and their communities, the violence of colonization remains very real, and so they may find some of the accounts in this book difficult reading. It is in this context that we have to understand the histories told in this book. The first crossings of the Atlantic, the fraught collision of foreign cultures, formed the roots of the intense web of global connections we find today. But this encounter was not neutral, and its legacy is painful and difficult. Indigenous peoples are still marginalized and disadvantaged across the Americas by most economic and social measures, subjected to stereotypes and discrimination, and disenfranchised from their own lands. Colonization continues. Language can be an instrument of that colonization. When Columbus arrived in the Americas in 1492, he promptly dubbed the inhabitants Indios, Indians, because he thought he had arrived in the East Indies. This anachronistic word covered everyone from Inuit peoples in the far north to the Tupi of Brazil, the Maya of Central America, and the Apache across the Southwest and Great Plains. Under Spanish law, the so-called Republic of Indians was indistinguishable, identities erased and distinctive pasts obliterated. For a historian, the challenge is not to add to this erasure, but rather to help reverse it. For me, the use of the word savage in my title, a racial slur which crops up all too frequently in sources, is a way to invert the expectations of both conquistadors and contemporary readers. For the Indigenous travellers in my work, Europe was the savage shore, a land of incomprehensible inequality and poverty that defied pre-invasion values and logics, where resources were hoarded, children ruled great kingdoms, and common people were meant meekly to accept injustices without dissent. Where the slur occurs in sources, I will use it only when in quotation and as sparingly as possible. Writing as a white British historian, working with sources that are too often about, rather than by, native people, I make the deliberate inversion of the imperial perspective central to my approach. I cannot and should not speak for Indigenous peoples, but wherever possible I will centre their voices and perspectives, allowing them to tell their own stories, valuing their knowledge and respecting the views of their descendant communities, who are, of course, far from homogenous in their attitudes or outlooks. This book covers a kaleidoscope of Indigenous cultures, communities, peoples and individuals, each with quite specific and equally valid ideas about what they prefer to be called. None of these terms is universal. In Mexico and much of South America, people tend to use pueblos indígenas, Indigenous peoples, and the term indios, Indians, has fallen out of use because it has often been used as an insult, like calling someone a peasant. But both indio and indígenas are common in Brazil, and indio is the most common term in my manuscript sources. In what is now the United States, Indian and American Indian are usually rejected by scholars as Eurocentric and inaccurate. After all, Columbus had not reached India. But these words have at times been reclaimed. The National Congress of American Indians is the oldest and largest organization representing tribal interests in the United States. And the American Indian movement, formed as a powerful protest group in the second half of the 20th century, still has many chapters. There are also historical Indian acts and treaties which use the word Indian, giving it socio-legal and political significance. The US Census counts American Indians and Alaska Natives, putting Indigenous Hawaiians and other Pacific Islanders into a separate category, largely to deny them access to funding and protections. Although many people across North America still identify themselves as Indian for a variety of reasons, or even the phonetic NDN, which is a playful way of reconciling older identities with newer ones, it is increasingly considered to be derogatory. Native American has become popular in recent decades, but is challenged by many Native peoples as centering colonial racial categories and validating the settler state by implying that the concept of America existed even before the arrival of Europeans. The term can also exclude people who are not Americans in the way we most often use the term, enfranchised citizens of the United States of America. In Canada, Aboriginal is the official government designation for the original inhabitants of the region, who tend to prefer to call themselves Indigenous, Inuit, who are not typically Indian in legal terms, Métis, or perhaps most often First Nations. The similar First Peoples has also gained popularity in some quarters, removing the potentially problematic implication that nations must be recognised by states. Of all these terms, only Indigenous is generally seen as relatively neutral, though Native has been reclaimed in recent years. The former is the UN's favoured term, although even this falls foul of some Canadian groups who were oppressed under the French as Indigenes. So what route should be taken through this linguistic minefield? As all of these paths and preferences are valid, I think the only solution is one that defers to Indigenous peoples themselves. There are far too many uncomfortable associations for me to stride into this field and start classifying people like Columbus. It is not for me to say what people should call themselves. So I will respect the preferences of particular groups and favour their preferred terms where not limited by my sources. Indians will appear only to reflect the 16th century texts when they speak of indios. And Indigenous Americans has been used in my title as the clearest way to articulate the geographical scope of the book for readers. Much of the current generation uses Native or Indigenous as a collective racial or political identity, but specific affiliations are almost always preferred. Throughout, I will respect tribal, national and individual identities by calling people by the names they called themselves. The most notable exception is my use of Aztec Mexica to refer to the people who dominated what is now central Mexico when the Spanish conquistadors arrived. They would not have called themselves Aztec, but they are so well known by this name, even to many of their descendants, that if I hope to change popular stereotypes of this often misunderstood people, then I feel its use is unavoidable. Introduction. In July 1519, Spanish conquistadors Francisco de Montejo and Alonso Fernández Puertocarrero set sail from Mexico to Spain with a fabulous treasure. Their ship was so overflowing
Sample complete. Ready to continue?